this uniting prayer. Almighty and eternal Father, again we return to worship you in spirit and in truth, to survey the things which lie before us as a nation, as individuals, to recognize our relationship to thy purpose and thy plan. Grant us, our Father, to be guided by thy instruction. Teach us to take stands in this vital hour for truth. We thank thee for the assurance of the victory of thy kingdom, of the spiritual purposes which have been identified with thy church, but applying it to the realism of living, in which it shall bear testimony to instruct thy people in what it must do. For the awakening of the church, we wait the outpouring of thy spirit as it's stimulating more and more of the awareness of thy people. For the awakening and the salvation of our nation, we look for thy many sons and daughters to be awakened and illuminated. For what we are watching, we give thee thanks as we see the stirring among thy people. We pray, our Father, that leadership shall be raised up at every level. The voice of the people shall become the voice of thy word, and the destiny of thy household, which you have proclaimed from the beginning and shall be accomplished because thou art the eternal one to bring it to pass, shall materialize in our time. We thank thee for the measures of prophecy and for the ability to bear vision and understanding as individuals to that which has been purposed, and that we can know the time and the season and the period and the condition. And so as we survey these situations, it is not without hope, but as a realization that we are at the great crucial testing time that thy word has referred to concerning the time of Jacob's trouble. And it is out of this that we shall be delivered with the guidance, the vision, the intervention, and the action of thy hand. So we commit ourselves to thy hand tonight, saying, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, praying that you shall realign thy people with the vision and with the understanding of thy command. Then we ask it. Amen. We are turning tonight in one of the great crucial periods of our history to find that this great nation of God's kingdom, a nation which has great and specific responsibilities, have been aligned with forces which are contrary to the best interests of our society, diametrically opposed to the program of God for this nation, for its welfare, and for the benefit of the world which it shall serve. We tonight as a nation are aligned with the powers of Antichrist. We do not make this statement loosely, but it is in full realization that if you want to understand the strategy of the Antichrist, the powers of darkness and the forces of evil, you then carefully watch what it is they support and what it is their agents support inside of your nation. For you're a very foolish people tonight if you do not realize that the Antichrist is a system, is a reality, and that the political program of the Antichrist is a reality today in the world. If you want to identify it, find that institution among the political strategy among nations that wages warfare specifically upon Christianity, that does its best in each area that it attains power in to eradicate the Christian church. Make no mistake about it, you are a part of a race, or divinely ordained, by the placing of your race in the earth and its history from that time on, for the establishment of God's kingdom, that accompanying those promises, covenants, and prophecies that relate to you in this book of your race, for as I refer to the Bible, I continually call your attention to the fifth chapter of the book of Genesis, to the fact that this is the book of the generations of Adam. Now, you may not like the fact that this is the book of the generations of Adam, but so it is. And this is the book of Adam's God, your God, our Father, which art in heaven. This is the book of the tracing of the genealogy of your race and of the nations of God's kingdom back to these great fountainheads of time and of history, of your faith and of your race. Specifically, there would have been no necessity of sending your race into the world if the world itself were not already captivated by symbols of darkness and by patterns of religion which had brought them into superstition and ignorance, worshiping demons and devils and doctrines of superstition under the control and power of archangels who had not kept their first estate. Biblical history clearly tells us that the antediluvian world and the ancient world that long preceded your race had been trapped and had been caught into the political machinations of a great design to control and to dominate forever the peoples of this particular creation. We stand tonight well informed concerning the background of antediluvian history and ancient history and pre-Adamic history. If you go into the background of the history of ancient Sumeria and the peoples of the Assyrians, or if you study the background from the steppes of Asia of the history of the ancient Chinese, you will discover at one time that these peoples talked about the great and mighty God of the heavens, talked about the one God, his many messengers, his mighty angels, and his many hosts. Their concepts of righteousness were the worship of the true God. Of standards of law and standards of society, they're quite compatible with your concepts of theology. They tell, however, about a great and mighty struggle in the ancient past that took place in the heavens above. They tell about what happened in the areas of their own existence and how there roamed across the earth great and mighty individuals who proclaimed themselves to be gods. They had had some knowledge concerning one archangel. Their knowledge concerning this archangel they tell about. They refer to him as one of the most powerful of the gods of the sky. They tell about how he set his dragon symbols and serpent power over their race. And they look forward to the things which he had promised to develop within their society. But one of the strange things out of their writing, whether you go into the ancient books of the Sun King inside of China, is they talk about how at one time, however, they had somehow a greater mind power than they have now. They had a greater understanding of the sciences, which they claim they have lost. They talked about their architecture, their art, their abilities. They referred to their ancestors, and they worshiped the past because they referred to their present conditions, their inability to produce sufficient food for their society, and all the things that accompany it as something that transpired a lost power, a lost wisdom, a lost art. And so they worshiped their ancestors because their ancestors had a better day than they had. But tied into the background, as the researchers in ancient backgrounds of the peoples of China and their various areas across the upper steppes, and their tying in with the things of the past, all founded upon the fact that a catastrophe had enveloped them, though they didn't admit this was a catastrophe, and they thought that it was because they were a very old race, and they had lost their fire and their spirit, and so they worshipped yesterday and looked for some new force to charge them, but at the same time now tell about the development of their religions. They talked about how the gods who they served and the many gods that came with him had fought a great battle in the sky, and how defeated in the earth he was establishing in the earth the minions of his new power, and how these beings intermingled with the various tribal leaders and the rulers of the ancient peoples of the Qin and of the land from whence they come. In fact, in this Chinese history, they tell you about how the waters were now, we see the waters of the Pacific rose in a great earth-shaking catastrophe in which earthquakes, whole areas of the land surface of the earth went down beneath the waters of the ocean. They talk about the land that used to bridge the areas between the mainlands of Asia and the islands of Japan. They refer to the old and ancient words of God Yah, and the word Yah Pan means the god Pan, which was one of the degenerate strategies of the fallen religions that developed this area of the earth. But that these were but high mountaintops, plateaus, and higher land of a continent that plunged beneath the waters of the Pacific. The strange thing that if you go back into the research into the ancestors of the Chinese tell how they migrated from this sunken continent to the high steppes of the high mountain lands and the high tablelands that reach from the rim of the world and the roof of the world in Tibet and Lhasa, across the steppes of the wastelands to Siberia, and of course across the whole top of northern China. And in their discussion concerning this, they tell how they fled far from the shaking earth and from the areas that had been plunged in inundation. And today the Chinese will tell you the story of the islands that are in the Pacific as the high parts of continent that plunged beneath the waters of the ocean. They refer to the fact that they migrated from this, that they had themselves evolved their present structures of society from the remnants of that great catastrophe. Strange as it might seem, these peoples, however, have assumed that these fallen archangels, these defeated ones they serve, who became their gods, the gods of the dragon and the gods of the serpent, they assumed that they would someday be victorious of the earth. Now they talk about the formation of the pattern of their religions. And these religions have gone through many evolutions inside the areas of Asia, especially is this true among the peoples of China themselves. Basically, the majority of Chinese today are Buddhists, but Buddha was a relative latecomer to the patterns of religion. But behind them, Buddha was proclaimed to be a living Gautama, and the ancient word Gautama among the Chinese relate to the one God above the heavens, and of course Gautamas were all the mighty gods that walked the earth, and Buddha was supposed to be the living Gautama, the greatest of all that walked the earth by his own testimony. It must be true, he told them so. Well, the fact remains that, of course, we understand some things about this. We know that Buddha himself was a clever jailbird and bandit and talked his way out of this by convincing him that he was a god. the history of Buddha is a rather unique one, even though today they pick up some of the better philosophies which they have out of their past and try to tie it to Buddhism to make it appealing as a religion. But behind this pattern is the long acceptance of the doctrines of devils and ancient superstition. And if you want to know how old peoples in places like China can be, let me tell you that out behind Peking is what's known as Chicken Bone Hill and Dragon Bone Hill. These are the two hills the geologists have been digging within, and the anthropologists have been probing to find out the antiquity of life in China and on its mainland. And here we discover that there are fossil bones 14,000 years old, some of them 23,000 years old at different levels in the great pile that's known as Dragon Bone Hill. And Chicken Bone Hill, which happens to be another one of the high hills full of fossils outside of Peking, have the fossil structure radiocarbon identified with 63,000 years of human beings of Asiatic type and origin that lived in the mainland of the continent of Asia and in the areas of China. And so China talks about its ancient past, and it cannot quite remember the full pattern of its origin from the periods from which it saw the sinking of the continents to the south and the loss of the area that they referred to as once their motherland. But they do recognize today that their political developments and their whole natural attitude is one that is tied and related to a priesthood. A priesthood that operates in Buddhism, that operates among the shamans in the high step temples of Asia, and is closely related to a strategy which they by inference take as a direction from certain prophets who are in direct communication with their gods. China doesn't always want to break down and tell the story. In their Josh houses, you will discover today that they are burning incense before a number of gods. These gods are gods the many. You ask a Chinaman how many gods there are, and he says he doesn't know. You ask him if there's one supreme god, he says the supreme god he worships is the father of the dragon. If you talk about God in the far-off distances of all creation that put the universe together and who is identified with you and your race as the author of your race and as your father, which art in heaven, and he does not worship this God, we'll admit that there may be more gods, but now he does not remember what his forefathers remembered, and he worships the dragon. I want you to know that this is not only true with the pagan peoples there, but throughout the earth, wherever pagan peoples are found or wherever they exist, you'll discover that they all reach back with antiquity into a past that precedes their present paganism. And they know their religions develop with the manifestations of those that claim to be in their midst gods. This is not only true in India, but as well as China. But if you go into Africa today and try to run down the background of witchcraft and voodooism, you come upon a very strange situation. Because Budas, who was one of the fallen angels that rebelled with Lucifer, was defeated by Michael the Archangel, according to the writings of Enoch and of the Scripture, and was cast to earth, became under Satan's minion the master of the peoples of the Dark Continent. That's one of the reasons why their religion is Voodooism, and they serve the concepts and the false magic of Budas, who was one of the fallen angels of the Luciferian household. You will note that in their background, they have never known any other religion than the serving of Lucifer or Budas. They are devil worshippers to the core, and Voodooism is a very highly practiced institution among all Negro peoples everywhere on the face of the earth. You say, well, of course, we don't have any of that problem in the United States because our Negroes here are Methodist, Baptist, and Presbyterian, Catholic, and everything else. But let me tell you something. There is a strong and powerful force of Buddhism at work in the United States that has enough control when the witch doctors pass around that they can make jungle cannibals out of Methodist Negroes and Baptist Negroes and Catholic Negroes or any other kind of Negroes right here in the United States. In fact, I could introduce you to a number of evidences concerning this matter, and we point out to you that this is a tribal background of religion which is utterly pagan. We also want you to know that one of the strange mysteries, and this is significant now, one of the strange mysteries among the satanic patterns of religion has developed over the last 65 years to become a quite strong and powerful force. You say, what is this to do tonight with the realignment of the nations? I'll tell you very quickly what it has to do with it. There is not today in the history of ancient China, the peoples of India, or the peoples of Africa today, anything that you can find compatible to your background, your origin, your philosophy, your race, and the inspiration that guides and makes it what it is. But there is something that is a rather unique strategy. A world council of religions is held and was first organized under a name of a Persian, Iranian, whose name was Abdullah Baraba Baha. Now this man called a council of world religions by proclaiming that he was an incarnate representative of deity in its many forms. Now at first this declaration, when made, was scattered throughout the nations of Asia and went through the Middle East and fought into India. And then there came some strange phenomena, peculiar incidents of the man's ability and his power, of his ability to know what was in the minds of men and to write to personages throughout Asia and tell them what they said and what they thought and what they were talking about at certain times of the day. That's all it took to impress many of these people. And it wasn't long before Abdullah Baraba Baha was giving audience to the leaders of Asia, its various rulers inside of China, the rulers inside of India, and the temple priests of Brahma, Vishnu, Siva, and Kali all received Abdullah Baraba Baha. Now, the thing that was most unique was they called a conference of religion. There was one called in India at Benares. There was another called in Lhasa, where at that time the supposing living Buddha, which was the Dalai Lama, gave special counsel to the gathering of all of the steppe religions of Asia. Another one was held way out in the Ural Mountains among many of the Mongol tribes that came to that gathering. All through the Middle East, a cry was given to Mohammedans everywhere, but Mohammedans at first listened and then turned and denounced Abdullah Baraba Baha as not a true prophet of God. This can be said about the Mohammedans, and we mention this now. The Mohammedans will never join themselves to any people that have more than one God. For even as your race was born to the call of Hero Israel, the Lord thy God is one Lord, the word Allah, Allah, Akbar has been the cry since the days of the Prophet Muhammad that every Mohammedan has heard anywhere in the world. Hear, O sons of Ishmael, the Lord God is one. Now the fact remains that Abdullah Baraba Baha, while having come out of an apparent background of Mohammedism, actually was one of those strange combinations, for he was none other than an Iranian Jew. He had been trained from his youth with the idea that he was going to become the master of religions, and that he was related by marriage to one of the women of the ruling house of Iran and of Persia. So thus it is that he had his entrance into the door. You know, it's a rather strange thing. In almost all the plots and conspiracies that affect the human race, you'll always discover that the unassimilatable children of Lucifer have had their hand in it. Move out with some identity that ties them to the very thing that Jesus said about them when standing before them. He separated the real house of Israel, the real children of God, the white race as such, and turned to those others who were frauds and usurpers and said, "Ye are of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father ye will do." Nothing else can be expected of them than what Jesus analyzed them to do, what he said, as he had often implied under inspiration and guidance of the past, that even as a leopard doesn't change his spots, he said, you're going to be like your fathers, you're going to fill up the stature of your fathers, you're going to be the development of the seed. And so in this instance, we point out that this is significant now. This Abdullah Baraba Baha gathered together all the religions of Asia. Simultaneously, the communist revolution was in its ferment. The powers of international and satanic Zionism had spread out into a two-pronged fork program. From the textbook of Das Kapital by Karl Marx to the developing strategies of party organization that was developed by Lenin and by Trotsky and many others, the Kerensky Revolution rolled into being, and it was financed by the money of Jacob Schiff of Kuhn Loeb and Company and of Fels Naphtha Soap here in the United States, and a great group of Jews who came from Rabbi Ben Jacob's synagogue in the city of Brooklyn, New York. In fact, I have in my library a Jewish section. This library is made up 100% in that section of books which they have written, for their own consumption. And among their historians, men like Gratzel and others point out that these are the heroes of their race. These are the men outstanding of their time. And they tell how they perpetrated and put over the Soviet Revolution, how this is their institution, how it is their dream that they are going to overthrow all the existing systems of government and establish a world Soviet, maintain power and control as its minions, and declare this is their institution from the beginning. They are willing to raise up Goyim leadership to accomplish their objectives as long as they can maintain control over it and maintain a balance of power. Now, this was their story. rather significantly when the Red Revolution came into being, and it swept all of the Russias into its grasp. It started a very militant program, politically so, to stamp out every vestige of Christianity and the Christian religion in Russia. They put Christians to death by the literal million. In fact, we have the World Centenary's Church Report, which was made back, my friends, in the early 20s, which was given to the Methodist Church before it fell into the Red Camp and was given to the Socialists, now organizations everywhere as well, concerning the numbers of peoples and their groups and the attitude that was taken by the Soviet government. Now, remember that at that time, the Methodist Church was very much concerned because of the activity against the church and against its missionaries. And so they published the World Centenary Report. In the first few years of the Red Revolution, the powers that rose to power put to death 3.5 million Christians at the very beginning of the Red Revolution. This was one of the greatest wholesale slaughters in time and history. It is to be noted that it was conducted in a period of supposed frenzy of revolution, but those that had virtual immunity during this period were the Jewish ghettos inside of the Soviet Union. None of them were touched. In fact, in the lead of that revolution and behind the scenes at every turn were new commissars and new leaders who had been selected from this group who behind the scenes were steering this pattern. Remember that Lenin and the background of Lenin is a rather unique one. Lenin is not his name. He was Zederbaum, and that's the name, and it will stay that way. Stalin was not the name of Stalin, by the way. We go back over the background of these many, and we have their names, and we have the record of their names, and we have the record of where their names were changed in the courts of Russia to give them names more appealing to the thing which they wish to represent. It's a rather significant thing, however, and we bring this to its tie-in of period. Shortly after the death of Lenin and the rise in the quick catapult of power that Stalin assumed as he became the dictator of the Soviet Union, there suddenly came a strange union. Wherein agnosticism, atheism, and utter paganism was embraced completely by the Soviet Union as a political strategy. Abdul Barab of Baha, who was now proclaiming himself the incarnate fulfillment of deity and the representative of many gods, not one, and who claimed his miracle working power, and who had been moving through India and through China, met with Mr. Stalin on the shores of the Black Sea. By now he was being heralded as the embodiment of the messianic hope of the ages. Now, from a very clear and careful analyzation, this was a counterpart of a force of Antichrist. For this man, by his claim, was claiming to be and participating by this claim in what was a strategy of actually joining with any political force that would help with the overthrow of Christianity, the establishment of a power that would be Asiatic. So taking the Middle East, taking Asia, and joining with Stalin in this position, it was the agreement of Abdul Barab Baha that he would open up all the religions of Asia for an endorsement of communism, if in turn communism would utterly eliminate from their anti-religious position the movements of Abdul Barab Baha. This was a rather significant thing because at the same time an alliance was made with institutions of organized world religion at which leaders from all of the leading organizations or cells of what we refer to as world jewelry and its cahils gathered together with Abdul Barab Baha. And they made a deal with Abdul Barab Baha that if he would lead Asia, that they would give word to those that represented their interests in Asia for complete cooperation. Now it's a rather significant thing that it was known during those formative hours of the Red Revolution while America slept, while we looked at the Red Revolution as a terrible thing going on over in Asia and in the land of the Russias, where Christianity was being martyred and stamped out clear down into the Ural Mountains and into the areas of the southern limits of what was once Imperial Russia, that this was an unfortunate thing. The average American didn't know that all of Asia was being set up by a program of anti-Christian false and pagan religions for an acceptance of communism to marshal the forces for world conquest. At the height of these strategies, a great number of people heard for the first time about Abdul Barab Baha. He was giving audiences down in Arab countries and in the areas of Iran to visitors who came to see him from the Western world. Some clergy went down to see him and always trying to pull a few fantastic demonstrations of supposed supernatural power. He mystified them with what could be just as simple as the rope trick in India. The fact is that the men saw it, they came away impressed, and they came back. But because of their Christian background, they did identify this in a rather unique way. They started to talk about a Drew Baraba Baha. Hollenbeck wrote a book, and then others wrote a book, and they called this man the super deceiver on the world horizon. Why? Because he claimed to be the embodiment of the spirit of one and many gods. At the same time, Mohammedism started to turn against this man because he proclaimed himself to represent more than one god. Then suddenly Abdul Baraba Baha died. The other day, a contemporary evangelist was talking about his recent interview with Abdul Baraba Baha and how he watched the works of this man, strange mystery man of Asia and of the Middle East. But I think he's mistaken, or he dreamed too hard his book, because Abdul Baraba Baha has been dead now for a number of years. There was a follower, his nephew, called the Bab. And in this strange religion sweeping all the pagan philosophies of the earth, the Bab became the representative of the carrying on of the continuity of this so-called mystical theological power. The Bab waged a continual and relentless warfare against Christianity as a religion of truth with the one and only God, and actually made quite a development among the peoples of India by embracing all of India's gods and by promising greater power to the temple priests of India if they would go along with the Bab. They pulled 3 years ago one of the most fantastic things in time, but it wasn't long before also the Bab is dead. So if anybody tries to tell you that these men are Antichrist or about to take the world, I can assure you they're not. Abdul Baraba Baha is dead, he's a Antichrist. The Bab is dead, he's a Antichrist, but they're not in the world today. But there are successors to the carrying on of the religion of Abdul Baraba Baha. If you go today to the shores of Lake Michigan, you'll see there a great temple. This temple is the temple of the Baha movement. You hear every once in a while about meetings of the Baha faith. And if you go there, you will find some who have mixed the philosophies of Asia with the philosophies of Christianity, and they put out a rather placid program of enjoining the peoples to think on things which are smooth and things which have no resistance, and to love everybody and to embrace the fact that everybody must like everybody else, his religion, his gods, his philosophy, his race, and that eventually we're going to flow together in one racial stream, and that the teachings of Baha are the teachings of the unity of all mankind. Now, that's the propaganda. But it's been very carefully geared to reach the financially successful widows of America. You say, what do you mean by that? Well, an analyzation of this movement has watched where they set up their programs. They set them up where they can find many retired and fairly well-to-do widows. They approach them as being carefully selected to join and to come and hear the lectures of the Baha movement because they have a greater intellectual capacity than most of their friends. And you know, that always works. The moment you go out and you tell these people they have a higher intellectual capacity and they've been invited to hear something intellectually higher than anybody else can understand, and here they all come because this must be the truth, and pick them out as being the smartest of all. But this, my friends, was the way the program of this false religion and this subtle Antichrist operated. They operated to get the finance they could get out of gullible Americans, and they carefully supported and spread the program of trained and careful and smooth speakers that were being sent in by the communist program of leadership and the spreading of communist ideas in America. And they would spread also their own teaching along with it. And a working union between Baha'ism and the communist world has been going on in the United States because this was the successful front. They could never invade the Christian church. You could not move into any Christian congregation and start to talk about the brotherhood of many gods. No one's going to listen to you. No one's going to accept this inside the present churches of Christendom. Though I will have to admit that there has been a degeneration and a deterioration in a great number of the churches. If you go today to New York City and you go down to the great Rockefeller Church, you can look at one of the largest churches of Protestantism in America, and you look up on the frieze and you'll see Jesus Christ and Buddha, Confucius, Zoroaster, and all the prophets and leaders of religious thought. And you look up there and you'll see that they have not left out Buddha, and they have not left out any of the leaders of the religions of the world. And it talks about up there the showers of the way. Let me tell you something. Anytime you march that way and that far down the line, it's time for Christians to wake up and change everything that's up on the frieze of the church. Whenever you try to put Christ down on the same level with all the false and pagan philosophies and religions on the face of the earth, you don't deserve to call the edifice a Christian institution. Now, your instruction is still the same. The God of this book, who says, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord thy God is one Lord," makes his declaration in Isaiah, "Behold, is there any gods beside me? Nor am I broken up in three parts either." He said, "There's no God beside me, there's none on the right, there's none on the left, I alone am God." When Jesus walked among men, he didn't say, "I'm just a descendant." He said, "He who hath seen me hath seen the Father, for I and the Father are one." This is an identifying factor with your race. You are monotheists. You are the servants of one God, the children of one God. You are the children by spirit of an eternal Father who propagated a race of his offspring and called it the Adamic race. The word Adam means white man. The word Heber means colonizer. And I want you to know tonight, as you go back to the 10th chapter of the book of Genesis and come on down, that the sons of Shem were called Heber, and that every white man on the face of the earth tonight is a Hebrew, and not a one of them is a Jew. Every white man is a Hebrew, and none of them are Jew. You say, "Well, aren't Jews white men?" Not in the strict sense of the word. You see, how do you know that? Because in the writings and in the statements of Rabbi Stephen F. Wise, he said, "The fact remains that the white people of America accept us as one of them. And because of this, it becomes very easy for us to move among their institutions to sell our ideas." This is Rabbi Stephen S. Wise. Now, when Rabbi Wise said, "The white people of America accept us as one of them," he himself did not accept himself as a white man and was very, very glad and chuckling over the fact that they fooled so many people that we just accepted them in the same bracket. Someone said, "You might have a Jew in here, Dr. Swift, and wouldn't like that." Well, that doesn't disturb me, because if there's a Jew in here, I don't like that. Every once in a while, someone has spoken out about the fact, should we be frank? My friends, the time has come when you better speak the truth, you better think the truth, you better unswervingly declare the thing you believe, and let the chips fall where they will. Because when they gather in their synagogue, they don't try to please you. You know, the time has come when we must make it a position of finality that we take stands for the things we believe and positions which are right. And it is only when a reawakening and positioning of the peoples of your race concerning who they are, concerning what their responsibilities are, and how they may carry out their survival, it's only when they take these stands firmly, are not ashamed to be aligned with it, that your race makes any great or major progress. Now, I point out this tonight because it's the background of a stream of events. The Red Revolution spread. All of the priests of Buddhism, except the last year and a half in Tibet, openly instructed their peoples to support and embrace communism. One of the major struggles Kaishek had in the mainland was against the priesthoods of the religions of China, telling the people that communism was Asiatic and they should accept it for political mastery of the earth. However, there were a lot of merchants, and there were a lot of farmers who had learned to know that what they produced and what they created had been the work of their own hands, and they were not about to divide it up under the so-called advocacy of communism, or to have their lands taken from them and redistributed among others who were not as effectively able to use it as they were themselves. And so great debates rose up in this area. You'll remember that the world revolution was spreading. The communist program was spreading and waging a relentless war against every individual who was identified with private enterprise or with any such pattern of thinking as is essential to your way of life, the ownership of property and the right of an individual to possess that which he had the creative ingenuity enough to earn or to buy. It was not long before the world knew that communism was barbarism, that it was tied with a major war against Christianity. Now, I am concerned as a Christian with this fact tonight. It's not necessary that I please every other pagan on the face of the earth, or that I accept or agree or plan on a coexistence with any range of society that has in its blueprint a surprise design for the liquidation of my race and my faith. And so tonight, we do not assume a Methodist position, as rightly accepted by the Methodist Conference, that our program is to develop a pattern for peaceful coexistence and of extreme trust upon these who have designed the destruction of our society. We are not against Methodists, but we're against the strange and funny thinking that has invaded their church and taken over positions of responsibility in their ecclesiastical hierarchy. The fact remains today that any institution that represents the worship of your God, the one and true and living God, which poses as the oracle of the Most High and is interested in the salvation of the nation and the race, should by no means at any time try to water down its resistance against the strategies of evil. I want to point out to you, therefore, that the Red Revolution expanded its course. Baism seemed to fade, but still operated behind the scenes in a world council of religious activities which it was helping to direct. High now on the consoles of world Baism were powerful and important Jews, members of the Nibrit, and participants in the stretching of Jewish objectives across the nations of the world. What a strange thing now. You will hear the statement made by a great number of Christian ministers that the Jews of today are the Israelites of the Bible and descended from Abraham, and they worship one God, and they gave us the Old Testament, and they're just like we are, and you'll discover that they're not worshipers of any particular God, and that the one God that they do identify themselves with as among the great happens to be the very one that you recognize as Lucifer or the devil. And inside of their Talmud, which I can show anyone who wants to see it, where they continually add to it the writings of their contemporary rabbis, they refer to Jesus Christ as the real Lucifer or devil, and they refer to Lucifer and the devil as the true God who the Christians abhor. I think that should be a rather interesting statement, because the clarification of it is only essential for you to look upon their own writings in this manner. Now, the thing is that their theology can be organized in many strange ways. That's one reason why, if you go to Palestine today, where the abomination of the desolators are standing in the holy place, Jesus told you at the climax of the age, the time of the end of the age, where you have the configuration you had last Sunday, which was measured by Ezekiel over 4,000 years before Christ with an exactness that has not been fulfilled since that time till this event. The day when the events which are taking place in the world as it relates to what's happening were also spoken of by Christ to his disciples when they asked for the end of this age and the ushering in of the new one. Why were they interested in the new age? You know what the disciples believed about the new age? They believed there was going to be a struggle between the powers of light and darkness, between righteousness and evil, and that the triumph of this age was going to be the triumph of Christian civilization, of the white race, of the kingdom of God, to bring in civilization, light, and understanding. Not, my friends, a war to enslave men. It would be a struggle that set men free. But they didn't have any doubt about the outcome. The balance of heaven comes into this. The other day, in one radio broadcast, a liberal pro-communist speaker was arguing with a conservative who was against communism. And they asked this conservative, wouldn't you like to see the nations and the peoples of your own race and of the background of your religion and who have the political concepts that you have, wouldn't you like to see them take over the world and rule it? And this silly fellow didn't know. He said, well, he said, I'd like to see everybody governed by Christian principles. And that's as far as he went. But the fact remains that the disciples knew more than this. They knew that the prophecies of the Scripture called for an awakening of people. Such a crystallization was to descend from the writings of the prophets, from the prophecies of the Scripture. Such an awakening, crystallization, was to descend on your race in the very months you're living in, that an awakened people were going to start instrumenting the prophecies of Scripture, the blueprint of God. They would steady and be guided to show themselves thus approved and carry out this objective. Now, I think this is most significant, because when the things were discussed and Christ pointed out the thing that they were asking about, what would be these signs and what would be the developing events, he told them what they would be. And then he made it very clear to them that the final design of the Most High God was to see that the nations of this world were governed by the sheep of his pasture, by Christian civilization. He said, I'm going to divide the nations, segregate them, as a shepherd divides the sheep from the goats, and give the administration to the sheep nations, or the Christian nations, to rule the world. Significantly, this is a divine rule in which the embodiment of God revisiting the earth was to take place. Now, this was taught. This was understood by the early disciples. They looked forward to such an objective. So the strategy and design does not call on the blueprint of God for coexistence with evil. It calls for the overthrow of enslavement. And in this instance, the powers of darkness and superstition enslave men. Men can be enslaved by the error of their thinking. Men can be enslaved by the superstitions which hold them down. I think it's quite obvious that when the Chinese had one God, they had enough to eat. Think that over now. When they had one God in their ancient past, they had enough to eat. They write about the time when all China was a great garden. They write about the fact when they had enough to eat, when they worshiped one God. Now they got many gods, many temples, and they don't have enough to eat, and they don't even know how to grow enough. What's the matter? Someone can say that's a coincidence. No, it's not a coincidence. For wherever you've gone, God has blessed you with agricultural knowledge and wisdom and understanding, and your race has had a marked impact upon the nations of the world, and it's one of the strange things. Even the Encyclopedia Britannica recognizes you as an agricultural race, as a race which has an affinity to developing food out of the soil and adapting themselves to finding out the problems of the areas of their environment and conquering it with thought and with intent and design. So you see, if other people don't do that, they're not your intellectual equals, even if somebody wants to say they're equal. We have today a strategy to try to tell everybody that they're equal and that all peoples are alike, and basically the thing we must do is get everybody to get down to the same level, never up to the high standard, and the result is that by so doing, the problems of the world are soon going to be solved. The Red Revolution is skillfully carried on a ruthless destruction in its own areas of any of these centers of truth that they were afraid of, specifically the Christian faith, the Christian religion. They waged a continual warfare until no one ever thought that would be a basic problem in America, because the fifth column that came in here declared they were always fleeing from something, and a continual chain of refugees were pouring into America, supposedly fleeing from the things they didn't like, from behind the banner of the Soviet Union and later World War II when it came along. We had an unprecedented number of refugees that came to America that said now they were fleeing from oppression inside of Germany. And so they poured in. But the strange thing that you would find if you were to go to the immigration department and search its records, or you to check back over the records of those that have been interrogated by internal security and who have been identified as anti-American, pro-communist, or agents and workers for foreign governments to overthrow yours, and you would note that the majority of these people who have upon these records of interrogation and investigation and security have turned out to be refugees that supposedly were fleeing from the very kind of oppression that they are helping to create after they arrived here. Now, we, of course, well recognize that there were a great number of refugees that fled Europe during World War II, because they knew that their political life, strategy, and design would not be acceptable to Europe in the stage of development of European political history and its awakening. And so they left there. But one of the most amazing things is that the climax of World War II was Soviet Russia, supposedly your ally. The master plan of the Baja Conference at Benares, in which Soviet agencies sat in, was now to be developed. They held a conference in the Black Sea, and representatives came from all of the pagan religions of the earth to that conference, presided over by leading speakers, commissars, educators, and organization for the reunion of all of Asia was called for a special meeting in the Baltic. And here, these religionists of pagan religions, these Cahils of major Jewry, and the Baha movement then existent, gathered with communist Cahils of major Jewry, and the Baha movement then existent, gathered with communist experts and planned in the instance and during a period of war that at the climax of the war they would use all of their instrumentality to bring about a world organization of nations. And then they discussed what this would mean. That if they could bring about a world organization of nations in which they would finally give assent to the surrendering of all national sovereignties, for the embrasure of a plan in which complete equality and liberty was going to be granted to all the pagan religions, and the extension of the political philosophy of communism was to be put everywhere. And so they said what they would form then would be a great world organization of nations, and the Communist Party said, we'll supply the political machinery, and you will deliver unto us the peoples of Asia. And that's one reason why the pagan religions of the world worked with communism, even though communism was politically proclaiming itself godless. And when World War II was over, and we heard the call that was given to America to join in San Francisco for the formation of an organization of United Nations. And of course, the communist instrumentality for developing the program of evil in this country was none other, of course, than Alger Hiss, who worked with communist directive and who designed the death trap of the United States, were it not for the awakening of the people and the purposes of the Most High God. Now, you might say this is not going to happen. This is a very popular thing. You can be for the United Nations and be considered quite proper and socially acceptable. That's all true. You can be utterly ignorant about this danger to your country, find yourself acceptable with the Kennedys, and you can move around the Society of Washington, and a few here in upstate Sacramento as well. You can read Time and Life and Newsweek and Cardinet in the newspaper, and you can say, my, they're all for the United Nations. You can listen to Mr. Stevenson when he said, this is man's last great best hope, and if we don't pay the indebtedness which is incurred in the Congo and help to solve this economic problem, this hope can come crumbling down. Well, I think that'd be a good thing for it to do, is to come crumbling down. I have in my files the background record of the communist leadership that formulated the policy and helped to work for a program of United Nations. Many of these leaders met in a Burma conference paid for by the United States of America, in which they were rediscussing the redivision of the land masses of the earth and the redistribution of its peoples. And they said that America, of course, with all the great open areas we have in Nevada and Montana and Wyoming, was a very selfish country to think that this is our country just because we signed a little piece of paper called the Declaration of Independence. I know two men in the Foreign Service who were friends of mine that attended this conference. And as we've said before, there always has to be one American at every conference of nations of the world to sign the checks and pay the bills. The uniqueness of this hour at this particular conference was a design that called for a redivision of the land surface of all the nations of the earth according to the population needs of the peoples of the world, who were to realign 40 million peoples from India and so many from China into the United States, and some that were to come out of Africa and the Indies, in order to add to it a colored balance. I have a Communist Party blueprint of a map for the redesigning of the United States. And in that map is the story of the creation in the southern states of the United States of what was to be called a black unit of the world communist socialistic republics. They're going to divide up the southern states and make a black republic out of it. I think you might be interested in a statement which we might point out from William Z. Foster, who was the head of the Communist Party up until a few years ago, and in his book Towards a Soviet America, he makes this blueprint. The final aim of the communist internationalists is to overthrow world capitalism and replace it with world communism. The Communist Party of the United States is the American section of the Communist International. The Communist International carries out a united revolutionary program on a worldwide scale. The American Soviet government will be organized along the broad lines of the Russian Soviets. The American Soviet government. I've got news for all Mr. Foster's ilk. There's never going to be an American Soviet government, and when the right wing gets through, there's not going to be a left-wing liberal one either. So if we left it up to Mr. Kennedy's sagacity, he would put the top communist operators in the key positions of security inside the United States government. You say, how do you know? Well, I'm just going by his record. Where I pause to tell you that an American correspondent asked him on January 24th at a press conference, Mr. President, why did your administration appoint two top security risks to handle the security program of the State Department of our government? The president said, why, what do you mean? Who are they? And this person said, why, Mr. President, there's Arthur Weiland. The president said, I have gone over his record. I hope what you said doesn't hurt his character at all in the eyes of the people. I've gone over his record with Secretary Rusk. I've gone over it. And he stuttered and he hemmed and he hawed. And he said, we've gone over his record and we're familiar with his record and we've certified him for this post. He's all right. He can't do any harm there. I mean, there's nothing. But if he did anything, well, he can't get away with anything. He's not going to do anything. This is the president. I'm ashamed of the fact that the president of the United States can't talk more fluently than that and more conversively with the subject, and was foolish enough then to make admission that he helped with the appointment of someone who he said, you don't have any evidence, what do you mean? And so they had to come out with the facts. It was on the radio, you could hear it. The facts about Mr. Weiland, who helped to overthrow Batista's Cuba, who was one of the most active left-wing pro-communist representatives on American payrolls, while he was in charge of Caribbean affairs, who helped and organized the strategy that sabotaged Batista's government at the last minute and misinformed our own representative and ambassador and relayed messages that caused the collapse of Batista's government. This is only one phase. Whether you are informed about this or not, down in Colombia in Bogota, back in 1948, there was a revolution going on there that started one night, and it was while General George Marshall was down as the official in your own State Department in South America at Colombia that this revolution broke out. The man who was in charge of it with machine guns attacked the people, liquidated several priests and some of the people by his own hand, and was seen and identified. 2,500 people lost their lives in that communist revolution. Even George Marshall, when he had turned on the radio to see what the news said, caught the seizure of a radio station by Mr. Castro. For Mr. Castro said, "This is Castro. This is a communist revolution. We have taken over Bogota." But he didn't. It wasn't successful. The army rallied. It captured Mr. Castro. It captured the heads of this murderous communist revolution. And it was Mr. Weiland, your ambassador to Colombia, that got immunity for Castro the murderer and got him off by claiming that he was the personal bodyguard of General Marshall and had a diplomatic immunity and couldn't have been involved. The red record of Mr. Weiland is a matter of internal security record of investigations by important responsible branches of your government. Yet your president appointed this man with this security record in the face of the hot situation we have in Latin America to the control of the security of the State Department and the assignment of personnel to security areas of danger. The president said, "I read this record. I appointed this man. I ask you tonight, out of 190 million people living on this in this land and in this continent that are citizens of your nation, don't you think we could have found two men for this task that were not security risks? Don't you think tonight that if he wanted to appoint two good Democrats, that out of the millions of good Democrats, he could have found men with the kind of courage that Senator Eastland and Senator Thurman have, who love America, that work for the State Department, have been educated in our universities, who would discharge their responsibility with loyalty?" There is no design to block the strategies of red revolution when you admit that you have appointed them to positions of power. The strange situation is that as we have become embroiled deeper in the United Nations, we have definitely fallen into the exact blueprint for the eventual control of every nation and the reduction of the sovereignty which the Soviet world Comintern devised. They not only said that we will not be bound by any of the agreements made by this organization, except when they work in our favor, but we shall vote and impel the nations which have joined us of the capitalistic world to accede to the requests and demands of United Nations covenants. This was the solace that Mr. Khrushchev gave 3 years ago to the Comintern when it was a little disturbed because there had not been enough aggressive positions taken that were followed with military action to force the Western world to bend to its knees. You know, I'm not in any mood tonight to cover the fact that communism is not only your enemy, but it was only a few years ago that Mr. Khrushchev was using the platform of the world to say, "I will bury you. We will liquidate your society. You will bend to our will, or it's death that you're going to receive." Significantly, we have been threatened with rockets. We've been threatened with nuclear devastation. We've been threatened with Russian Air Force and Russian Navy and Russian submarines. We have been told that if we carry out the objectives of our own government in a vowed position, if we carry out the Monroe Doctrine that doesn't let communism put its foothold or any other foreign power to intervene with the affairs of the nations of the Western Hemisphere, that we are going to be attacked by their powers. If we drive Castro out of Cuba, or if we try to break up the Castro Revolution, we are told that we're going to be hit for destructive and complete annihilation by the powers of the Soviet Union. Now, we're not a bit intimidated tonight. We know that they can't blow America off the face of the earth. We know we've got a divine destiny. We know when they start pushing the buttons that there's going to be another story told to posterity. Not that this was the end of America, but this was the end of communist tyranny all over the world. Tonight, the big problem is not the ability of your military. The big problem is treason in high positions of government that limits your military from carrying out the oath of protecting the interests of your nation, which they've taken. The balance of power of the world you were born in the great majority of cases, was the balance of power of great Christian nations. You have lived in the hour in which the world you were born in was governed by the balance and influence of great nations like the United States and Great Britain and Germany and Norway and Sweden and Finland and Denmark and Belgium and Holland and Spain and Italy. And when you looked out over the way, it was the nations of the Western world who had not only the balance of power, but America and Germany and Britain and Scandinavia had the great industrial technological abilities to outproduce and outmanufacture and outcreate any area of the earth. More than this, the United States and Great Britain and Germany and Belgium and Holland and other nations had carried the ramparts of civilization out into the Pacific and into other parts of the world. Don't eliminate America from this picture. The communist revolution wants to downgrade colonialism, but all the development and expanse in the earth is colonial. Just remember, you know who you are. You're the sons of Heber. The word Hebrew means colonizer. You came down out of the steppes of the Tamir Plateau. You built civilizations all over the ancient world. You even were able to capture Ur and the great plain of Shinar to build the mighty city of Ur, the Chaldees. And then under false leadership, when you started to make that a metropolitan, cosmopolitan city of all races and religions, God called Abraham to come out of Ur of the Chaldees because he wanted to preserve your race line and its purity, and he didn't want you to be a mongrelized, integrated society. There's no way for anyone to argue that down. It's there as a record. God said, I'm calling you out so you won't mix. You have a holy seed. You have a vision. You have an ability. There is no doubt that the Encyclopedia Britannica, number 2 edition, carries this information, that illumination and science and progress and development in every field is being carried by the expanding civilization and culture of the white man who ever cornered the world. The Encyclopedia Britannica in that edition tells you that schools and churches and agriculture and manufacturing and development was being carried to the Congo by the Belgians and carried into the Kenya and into these various parts of Africa by white nations. And the evaluation of expense showed that far more was being expended on developing the ends of the earth than was being taken out. What changes these facts today? Nothing changes the fact that you put out the light of white leadership and the light goes out all over the world. That you replace it only with witch doctors, superstition, idolatry, paganism. Someone said, well, what about the modern technique? What about the expansion of our know-how? Our four-point program has put our knowledge out to the ends of the earth. Look at India today. If you took out white men's leadership outside of India, it would crumble as a second-class power and quickly. It may be called the largest a democracy on the face of the earth. But, my friends, it is nothing like your great republic. We have often told you that under the four-point program that you've subsidized, you were to develop their metallurgical industry, their manufacturing industry, their general program for development of employment and becoming a first-class nation in every industrial field. And you sent over your geologists to find the ore. Then you sent over your metallurgists to show them how to reduce the ore. And then you built the factories and you staffed them with American workers and workers from other countries to reduce the ore and to make the great billets of metal, which they made. And then afterwards, you made an agreement that you'd buy the metal from them to help their economy. So someone talked about the great abilities. My friend, that ability demonstrated that though you trained the people, though you showed them how, you have been doing most of the work, paying all the bills, and then buying back the product that makes them supposedly a great power in the industrial field today. This is true in many other fields. But the thing I point out tonight is that your civilization, which reached a great height and is climbing higher in technological and spiritual understanding, was taken into an organization where your raw materials, your resources, and even your liberties were to be taken and reorganized, redivided, and redistributed without you possessing the basic rights of your own heritage. And I tell you tonight that always Russia's had her way. Just as Trigley Lee told us that always the commander of the United Nations Armed Forces would be a Russian general. That's true. Mr. Arkoff is tonight the head in the United Nations of the military forces. We've always had Russian military commanders. We could not win the Korean War because of this matter. It was forbidden to Douglas MacArthur. We have not been able to win anywhere in anything we've been engaged in since we have entered into the United Nations. They are in supreme command in this matter. I think it's significant, therefore, that you look out at what has happened. We have had, this isn't a matter of the Republican Party or the Democratic Party, but we have had in the presidency over the last 30 years of our history men who have marched down the road to abandoning the independence of the United States of America and placing us in the full center of a world communist design strategy. And if they didn't know that, they're not smart enough to be president, and I've questioned that right along anyhow. That doesn't excuse Mr. Eisenhower, who is more responsible than many of the others for the things he helped to carry out. But I point this out to you, this is the strange thing. All through the development of the United Nations, it hit colonialism. It hit anything that was being done by white Christian nations anywhere in the world. It tried to clam down our necks, the building of a society that embraced all religions and all cultures and all philosophies. And then we watched the strange appointments in high positions of power. Unto America discovered a whole new crew of writers and authors in our magazines were continually trying to give us a guilt complex for being American, for having enterprise, for having vision, for having creative ingenuity, or for not wanting to have America divided up, redistributed, or spoiled. If you think that this is a light pattern, let me tell you that getting back to what Mr. Foster was talking about, the American Soviet government will be organized along the broad lines of the Russian Soviet under dictatorships. That all capitalist parties, Republican, Democrat, progressive, or even socialist, will be liquidated. There will be dissolved all other organizations, including chambers of commerce, employers' associations, Rotary Clubs, American Legion, YMCA, the Masons, the Odd Fellows, the Elks, the Knights of Columbus, and all lawyers' organizations will be abolished. The press, the motion picture, the radio, and the theater will be taken over by the government. More than this, studies will be revolutionized and being cleansed of all religious, patriotic, and other features of the bourgeoisie ideology. The decisions of the Soviet will be enforced by armed communist guards. Citizenship will be restricted to those who do useful work, excluding all capitalists, landlords, clerical, and other non-producers by disenfranchising them. This is Mr. Foster's own book on the Communist Party in America. But what interests me here is that in the black belts of the South, we will form a Negro Soviet. The Negroes will be given control to govern over all of these areas and over themselves and all the white minorities that live in this section. And the party will elect its candidates to legislative bodies to carry it out. Trade unions are the great schools of communism and will be permitted to survive under party direction. I think that's a rather significant thing. I only pointed out because in its function, Mr. Foster then aligns himself with objectives that are being carried out within the civil rights section of the conventions of the United Nations to abolish inside of your nation any of what we might call rights of individual institutions or organizations to restrict their membership or to carry out their identification on the basis of religion or on the basis of political affiliation that will be separate from the major strategy and design of the United Nations. You know, this is the thing that's significant here. The United Nations does not recognize the right of you to be against anybody inside the United States. Did you know that? That if you cause anybody, political, social, or racial, any mental stress, or create by anything you discuss any ill will, you are in violation of the Human Rights Convention of the United Nations, which cites that if you do this, or by criticism cause them any mental disturbance, that you are guilty of the crime of genocide. Significantly, you can read the Genocide Convention as a part of the Human Rights Convention of the United Nations, and you'll discover that this thing is so. You will discover we didn't write this convention, we are only reporting this convention to you. Within the blueprint of the Asiatic Conference held in Burma, it was outlined then by United Nations leaders, and they were communist leaders at the same time, that the day was soon to come when there would be no national administration in any government that would be able to determine the affairs of the relocations of peoples, the redistribution of raw materials that were produced, or the occupation of the areas of the land masses of the earth. that this was all going to be handled by world departments inside the United Nations. I have the literature, quote and unquote. The last time Colonel Gurr and I were in Washington, we went to the United Nations, and we asked them to give us information about the program for the relocation of peoples, and could they tell us how we would have a program that we could present to churches that would talk about the redistribution of world goods. And we got a very active and very ardent United Nations man who said, oh, we're so glad the churches see the light, and we're very glad to take you in and explain this to you. This is the only hope of the world, and the churches can help by making people aware that they should be unselfish, and they should move in to help redistribute all the wealth of the world and do this thing equitably so everybody has their proper share. So we went in and we listened to this man while he gave us charts and materials and talked to us about this. In fact, he said, Dr. Swift, we would want him for some time to get this material in the hands of Christian churches in the West, and we're going to see that this stuff is mailed directly to you as we produce it each month. Now, what did we discover? We soon discovered that this world organization, actually, we're trying to use Christian churches to carry out propaganda on literature and material printed by the United States government at the taxpayer's expense to turn you into a world socialist society without any flag or identity. And so when we acted as though we didn't understand quite what was all about and wanted a little more explicit explanation, we said, well now, how are we going to bring about this so-called equitable redistribution of the goods, the wealth that this great nation can produce, when there isn't anything that a Congo native has to trade, and there's nothing that he could contribute that would basically be of value to the United States? How will we accomplish this? Would it not be easier to train him how to make the things he needs down there and put him to work making it for himself? No, he said, that upsets the strategy which we have of seeing all peoples, their lives, their thinking, and their work flow together in one great happy world family. I said, what would this Congo native contribute to get his equal share with the contributors in our society that have made and created this? Oh, he says, you're taking kind of an anti-social position, aren't you? If I believe that you should go to work to get your wages, I'm anti-social. If I believe that you should use a little energy to create the things that you want for yourself, I'm anti-social. If I think that somebody shouldn't have the arbitrary authority to come in and confiscate all they want of what I earn or what I produce and give it to people that are doing nothing for it, I'm antisocial. If I believe in keeping the flag of the United States government flying, if I say get out of the United Nations is a conspiracy, I'm antisocial. Well, what difference does that make? What society is this we're talking about? It is the alignment of the nations which today are in the house of the Antichrist. We could show you passage of Scripture after passage of Scripture. The book of Isaiah said, and your covenant with death and with hell shall be disannulled. Your agreement of hell shall not stand, and it's going to be broken up with the overflowing scourge of the military crisis that shall come by to trodden down this false peace organization. God Almighty speaks out in Ezekiel and said, woe unto these clergymen, called themselves my preachers, that said this was the way to peace and called men to join this organization that they might have peace. They said peace, peace, when there wasn't any, and they daubed it with untempered mortar. The book of the Zohar and the ancient history of the symbols of our race, the mortar that was used in prophetic symbol was the spiritual truths of the knowledge and the wisdom of God. Thus saith the Lord, spiritual and moral responsibility and integrity was spiritual mortar. And mortar that was used in any building philosophically or among men that was untempered, lacked anything of spirit, and was a fallacy built on a lie. So God said, this world organization of nations to which your clergy invite you to join, and he said, these preachers say that God showed them and this is God's will, and he says they lie because I didn't say it. Then God makes the declaration, lo, they built this wall with untempered mortar and it's going to fall. The great o'erflowing hailstones or bombs will rend it in the great storms of war. For lo, when the wall is fallen, you're going to turn to some of these false clergy and false political leaders and says, where's all the daubing you daubed this wall with? We thought this was going to be a world organization of peace. And I want to ask you this question tonight. Can you tell me whether there's been peace on the earth since the United Nations came to being? Can you tell me when you've had peace? You have been in one constant, active war somewhere in the world ever since the United Nations came to being. It's never been able to establish peace. It has always granted victories and areas of victory to the world revolution. I point out to you tonight that under leadership, ill-advised, was 77 non-Christians out of 116 on the president's cabinet. That instead of voting in the United Nations, in an area that would create power in the Western world, that would have power to stop communism, that would have power to roll back the forces of the political schemes of the world revolution, you do not vote with Britain, with France, with Germany, but on these affairs that affect these expanding areas of communism, you find yourself voting with the African tribes just out of cannibalism that were admitted to the United Nations at the suggestion of Mr. Eisenhower. You find yourself voting with India. You find yourself voting the other day, 99 nations vote. Others abstain because America had cast its vote. Some of your Western allies didn't want to vote because they didn't want to unbalance the economic relationship they had with you. Isn't it a strange thing that only Spain and South Africa voted to not make Portugal get out of her own colony in Africa? What kind of a world is this? The alignment of the nations at the present time aligns all the nations of the Western world in the world government program of UN involving your own nation. But it splits that line around communist objectives and finds you now voting for the social revolution or the world revolution with the pagans of the earth against Christian nations that are your natural allies. You say, what's going to happen? Did you know that in the United States of America, the great challenging awakening that's sweeping every community and town and city is a reevaluation of this trap we've gotten into, a reaffirmation of faith in the Declaration of Independence, and a redetermination that we're going to follow the laws of God and fulfill this instruction that He gives us in the New Testament, come out from among them and be ye separate. Now, there's going to be a realignment of nations. It's coming very fast. You're going to discover you can't trade with the devil and find he keeps his word. We made a trade the other day with the devil. I don't know, but the Russians, I think, won. We swap powers for Abel, or Abel for powers. Someone said, well, that was a great thing. We owed it to that young man. That young man owed it to America to not be captured alive. And he owed it to his nation not to divulge the things he divulged that came out in the front pages of Russian newspapers that your government knew he had to talk. There have been millions of Americans in the history of our nation who were willing to give their lives for their country. And a great many thousands upon thousands have. But they did not give information for bodily comfort, and they did not reveal secrets of their nation. But Mr. Abel didn't tell you anything. He was a Soviet spy with technological training that looked over the shoulders of your nuclear scientists and was able to copy and record and make material for the Soviet nuclear war agencies. He had to deliver secrets. He was captured with material upon him. He was put in your penitentiary, and there he continues his study and his research. There he continues his diagramming to keep the things in his mind fresh. Probably one of the most dangerous spies you have in the United States of America was Mr. Abel, because he retained and knew secrets of yours concerning nuclear defense, factors that would help Soviet Russia, and things that relate to nuclear strategies inside your country. You caught him, you stopped him, the people charged him, the people put him in the penitentiary, and that's where he should have remained. I think that some great senator should come to the floor of the United States Senate tomorrow and demand an investigation as to who let the people's prisoner go. Well, you say we had to get powers back. No, we didn't have to get him back. The only way that this should have been done the day they took him. The only way it should have been done is the day they shot down undefended planes over the North Sea. The only way this should have been done is when they held 1,000 American soldiers and aviators behind the Chinese curtain from the Korean War in violation of international law. The way it should have been done is a 1 5-minute ultimatum to the Soviet Union, or blast the Soviet Union from the face of the earth. But no, we made a deal. And you swapped Jew for Jew. But they got somebody who carried back information, and you got nothing. Someone said he'll fly again. Let's hope not. I just point out to you tonight that this is all part of the same factor that has been working inside your nation to your own detriment of interest. And I'm going to tell you tonight that over one quarter of America is now awake. Over one quarter of America is now awake. Less than 15% of America make up the left wing. Less than 15% of America make up the left wing. Someone says, well, don't they dominate the Democratic Party? They speak for it in some areas of power in the administration. But they're also in the Republican Party, and they speak there for the instruments that are behind them. Someone said, what must we do? The hour has come when you and your race and your nation must not only separate itself from the United Nations, but you must reaffirm your destiny. You must redetermine that you're going to decide your affairs and not the world. You must determine that you're going to meet your God in the blueprint which He has in store for you before the great war starts. God's going to realign the nations. He's not only going to blast you out of the United Nations, but He's going to blast the United Nations out of every Christian nation. You're going to be engaged in a defensive war, and then an all-out assault against your enemies for the preservation of the Western world. And do you know that you're going to save Germany first? Strange, isn't it? Scriptures say you're going to save the tents of Judah first. More than that, you are going to participate in an action that your military are prepared, but your administrative levels are not prepared to assume. You're going to be betrayed and tricked. You're going to discover that you have an Asiatic theater of war breaking out. You're going to discover you've got five places of tie down in the world all at once coming with suddenness, because Mr. Khrushchev is going to satisfy his party leaders and try to accomplish this in his own shortening lifespan. And prophecy said that you only joined a movement of infamous evil that was built on a lie, and suddenly it shall break around your ears, for you have not trusted in the truth, but in a lie. I wonder what Jack Kennedy's doing in Indonesia, the last place that a representative of free society should go to tonight, in the face of the fact that you've been betrayed by Sukarno, who's taken your goods to fight communism, but is being allied tonight with communist purposes, is receiving submarines and military power as well as naval power from the Soviet Union. Mr. Sukarno, who was communist-directed, educated, and trained, then became supposedly an anti-communist, and now aligns himself up with conquest against another area under the administration of the white man. And your president flies over to visit him. Your president's brother. Maybe this is what Mr. Nixon's talking about when he said that he thought that this was the best candidate for Secretary of State there was anywhere in the country. Well, I don't think so. Nor do I think that Mr. Nixon's qualified for any job bigger than dog catcher in the United States. This might seem strange, but my friends, when you attack the right wing with which you were identified in your climb to power, which you do not personally disagree with in personal conversation, but which you attack for expediency when you come before television or the press, then you're not the man to lead America. So we point this out to you tonight, that before you have gone through the next few months, there'll be a new alignment of the nations. You say, what will be the new alignments of the nations? It'll be a new military pact between the United States, Great Britain, France, Germany, Norway, Sweden, and the land of Finland will move your way and not into the Russian camp. And a revolution will explode, whether they like it or not, in East Germany, in the midst of the attempt to make great military maneuvers against you. And you're going to find Russia will swallow up Iran, and Egypt will fall into the Russian camp. Not because she desires to be there, but because of the strange shifting of power, this will be so. And you'll find the true nature of Israel ally at that time. For there is a working alliance between Israel ally in its political Zionism and the world revolution. And you're going to discover that this new alignment will be accompanied with new leadership in the United States of America. You say, how's it going to come? Well, God knows how to put it there in 24 hours if he has to. You can get it in an election if you have that much time. But I'm going to tell you that you're going to see the greatest shift of kaleidoscopic events in world history, and they're going to start very quickly in the very few days which are ahead. When we gave you a preview of events of this year, we showed you the measures of alignment. We told you at that time that there would be low atmospheric pressures following alignments that would create great storms that would rock the weather conditions in the Atlantic and along the seaboards of the earth, and you're having that situation. In fact, the storm of last week was the highest and greatest waves that the Atlantic has had for many years. A $100 million vessel, one of the largest today of the fleets of passenger liners from Europe arriving in New York Harbor, arrived there Thursday with buckled deck plates and with bow plates bent by tremendous storms. And its captain, who was an experienced navigator and seaman, had said that as I crossed the Atlantic, these were the greatest waves I ever saw. They were 45 feet above the bridgework, and they crashed down upon the decks of my ship with such thundering reverberations that we wondered each time if the ship could stand this terrific impact. And this is the best of your great modern shipbuilding in the face of a storm that makes the works of man look puny. These are the measures. There's more than low atmospheric pressures creating your own inundation moving around the world. You're in the beginning of a measure that affects the nervous systems, the thinking policies, and the patterns of man. And with all the pressure that's awakening everywhere to try to force your civilization to its knees, the Spirit of God is going to move on your race with the greatest challenging spiritual flow force that your race has ever seen. The other day we talked to a group of people that were very, very much concerned about their nation's problems and their purpose. They had never heard a message which we delivered before. They knew very little about what was going on inside their nation. But this group of people were listening to this message. When they listened to this message, the majority of them, for the first time, they were with us. Now, this is something we can tell the left-winger, or the spy, or the person that wants to evaluate the work of the church today and its message of truth as it warns people to separate from Antichrist. Don't let them get exposed to this truth, because 85% of them always will end up on this side. 85% will end up on this side. Someone says, how can it be stopped? Try it, my friends. You can't stop the truth. This is God's day and God's hour. We have the ready-made organization across America to take America by storm. You say, what is it? It's the Christian Church. Call up Washington. Get out the FBI. You know, the FBI is a good organization. If you've got a good administration, it can be an awful ogpoo if they are being directed to do what they don't want to do by a bad one. But they don't have any control over the church. Call out any institution that you think that wants to make war against right and against awareness. And my friends, if they start fighting the church, they're all through. For the gates of hell are not going to prevail against the church. This is what God talks about when he said he's going to raise up an Elijah ministry. And there are more clergy flocking to the standard and to its truth every day. And they are coming through a dozen organizations and a dozen institutions and a dozen processes. But they shall know the truth. The truth shall make them free. So we tell you tonight that this is your day for God's deliverance.